John Constantine, a Hellblazer podcast.
Hey everybody, and welcome back. Before we get into the episode, just want to let you know that this is the free version of the podcast, and all that means is that we are way behind where I'm at in Patreon. So if you are loving this podcast and you need more John Constantine in your life, definitely go check us out at patreon.com/planestrainsandcomicbooks and sign up for the Hellblazer tier, where you'll get access to the entire Hellblazer library that I've recorded so far. And also, you get access to the exclusive episodes of the Planes, Trains, and Comic Books main podcast. So if any of that sounds good to you, definitely go over to patreon.com/planestrainsandcomicbooks, all one word, and sign up there. And with that out of the way, let's get into the issue. Today we're reading Hellblazer number 67, and just a little catch up on what happened in the last issues. We saw the end of the story arc called Fear and Loathing. And in that story arc, the Angel Gabriel went rogue for a bit. He was having a bit of doubt from the last time he talked to John Constantine. In that conversation, John had suggested that some of the people that he had been hanging out with in the Cambridge Club, the place that he hangs out on Earth, were people that Gabriel's father would not want him to associate with, like nationalist neo-Nazis. And this made Gabriel kind of spin into a crisis of faith. So for the first time ever, at least it seemed like that, Gabriel left the grounds of the Cambridge Club. And because of this, the neo-Nazi nationalist guy that he was talking to, who was named Charlie Patterson, was alerted by a waitstaff member that Gabriel left the club looking very odd and that he mentioned the name John Constantine before he left. And from that point on, we had two stories going on at the same time. We had what was going on with Gabriel and his melancholy kind of existential crisis he was on. And the other story was what Charlie Patterson was trying to do with John. And what he did was he sent some goons over to Kit's house because he was just trying to get Constantine to back off. He figured he could hurt Kit and get John to stop looking into or stop messing with Gabriel. So he sent some goons to her house to rough her up. But she fought back and actually really seriously wounded one of them, stabbing them in the groin with a knife. But of course, this all upset her because her and John had a pact that if they were going out, he wouldn't bring anything that he's involved in her life. And then in the background with Gabriel, we saw him meeting a woman named Julie while he was walking around all sad. And then they hit it off. He decides to sleep with her. And she rocks his world, you could say. And just as they finish making love, Julie turns into the succubus Chantinelli that is friends with John, and it turns out that this was all a plan to get the Angel of Gabriel to fall, and then Ellie rips out his heart and gives it to John so that John can now control and manipulate the Angel Gabriel whenever he wants. So that is where we left off on the last issue, with John getting control of Gabriel and making a deal with him, and Kit being pretty upset with John that the stuff that he's mixed up with came into her life. So first things first, with issue 67, we got the cover. We see John is kind of in a Jesus Christ pose on the front, but he's leaning against a gravestone is what it looks like. We see a couple of angry faces and close-up of eyes squinting very angrily on one side. And then on the other side, we see a woman who has a bag packed and she is going towards a boat. We see that this issue is written by Garth Ennis with art by Steve Dillon. And we start off on the first page in a graveyard. It is evening time, it looks like, and it is pouring rain. And we're getting just random scatterings of panels that are showing the different parts of the graveyard. And then there's a close-up of John Constantine laying on the top of, I guess it would be called a tomb. It's like an above-ground cement grave. And he's just laying on top. The rain is hitting him. He looks like he's pretty depressed. He's just staring up at the sky. And the narration says, "Do you know the best way to kill a man? To make it hurt the most? To twist the knife in his heart and soul, and laugh when he screams and dies? You put the blade in his best friend's hand, and you kill the poor bugger with love." Then we get a full splash page of John from above, so we're looking down at him, and he's looking pretty disheveled. His tie is loosened, and his front shirt is untucked, and he also has a bottle of something in his hand like he's been drinking. And we see on this splash page, the name of this issue is End of the Line. Then we flash back to earlier that day in Kit's house, and Kit is staring out of a window, and the narration says, "She was nervous. She could have written him a letter, but that was a stupid wee girl's thing to do. She hated chickening out of anything. God, though, this was going to destroy him. She'd seen enough of the real him to know that. And then Kit says to herself out loud, "Typical," and her narration continues. "Aye, right enough. Men would take you for granted, come to rely on you. You'd be like a friggin' foundation holding them up half the time. Big bloody kids, but all the same." Then we see Kit leave the window and she walks over to the bedroom in the apartment. And we see that it looks pretty barren. Unlike before we saw, you know, there's like furniture, like lamps and stuff. All that's left is a bare mattress and a bed frame. So it seems like she's definitely moving out or something. Then she walks back to the living room, and as she does, John comes in through the front door and says, "All right." And Kit turns with a smile for a second and says, "Hiya." But then John messes up and says the wrong thing, saying, "You're talking to me again then. About bloody time." And this makes Kit kind of close off again, and she turns her back to John and says, "I'm moving away back to Belfast, John." And John asks, For how long?" She replies, "For good. I'm fed up with this town. It smells rotten, so it does. And the people carry on like, I don't know, it's like they're beaten. They've nothing left in them. I want to go home to see all my friends again, not just talk to them on the phone." And then she turns around and she says, "And I don't want to be with you anymore, John." And as John hears this, you can definitely tell in his face that this hits him hard. And they actually just stare at each other quietly for a second. And then John breaks the silence, saying, "Look, I mean, Kit, I know that was rough. Those two arseholes last week." But Kit cuts him off, saying, "You let me down." And John replies, "But I didn't even know about them." And Kit says, "You promised not to do that stuff around me, remember?" And John replies, "Yeah, but you know what I get up to. You can't expect to be left out of it forever. Nobody's perfect, love." And what he says kind of sours Kit, and she gets kind of a scowl on her face, and she says, "I don't want you to be perfect. I just want a quiet life without some bastard kicking down my door and coming at me with a switchblade." Then John sarcastically says, "A quiet life? So you're moving to Belfast?" And right here, I think he's referring to the violence that was going on between Britain and the IRA. There was a lot of bombings and stuff in the early 90s, I think specifically in Belfast. And of course, this was not the right thing to say. And she says, "Oh, don't be so bloody stupid. You've never even been there. You don't know what you're talking about." And then with her back still to John, she walks towards the window that she was looking out before. And John says, "Kit, this is, please, love. I thought I've never got this close to anyone before, right? Never. Never felt so good either. And I definitely never said stuff like this to anyone in my life. And as Kit stares out the window, she cuts him off saying, "And now you've ruined it all, John." And John takes offense to this and he says, "Bloody hell. How'd you get to be so cold?" And that was also not the right thing to say, because she turns around with a really mean scowl on her face. And then she rushes at John with her fist out like maybe she's going to hit him. And she says, "I'm not freaking cold. Just because you've made a bollocks of your life and you've got a head full of mad dog shite doesn't mean everyone else has, right?" But she doesn't hit him. And she turns around and puts her head down and says, "You're a stupid, selfish bastard, John. And you've never really cared about anyone. I'm getting on the train at 3:30. The rent's paid till the end of the week. You can stay here till then if you want." And at that, John turns around and grabs his coat and walks out of the door and he says, "Piss off." And as John walks out, we see Kit doesn't move at all. She is staring out of the window still. But then we get a panel of her face and it looks like that last little line and maybe everything John said before really soured her. So as John is leaving her building and walking out to the street, John hears her yell, "Oi, Constantine!" And as he looks up, we see she has thrown all of his belongings, which is that one singular case with all his clothes and magical documents and stuff, out of the window, and she didn't close it. It is like fully open, so everything's falling out, and she's yelling to him, "You can take your bloody old shite with you! You piss off!" And as the case lands at John's feet and all his stuff is floating through the air, John yells out, "Jesus!" Then we cut to a little while later where we see John is sitting outside in front of a pub. And he seems pretty drunk because the narration from his head is definitely repeating itself a bunch as it says, "That's it. That can't be it. She can't just... That's it. Can't be it. A dream. Still there in bed beside her. Not here with 9 pints in me. I'm with her. Wake up any second. Wake up." And then as he doesn't wake up, he realizes this is reality and he says once again, "That's it." Then John says out loud, Oh, Jesus. We also see that there's a couple of young men sitting at the table next to him outside, and they're kind of watching him, and they look like they have smiles on their face, like if they're laughing at him. But John doesn't notice them, and the narration says, "It's like the ground's gone from under me feet, for Christ's sake. Have to keep a grip. I'll go to bits. Christ, she can't be gone. This is gonna kill me if I don't wise up. I'm not gonna cry, am I? No. Don't lose it. Except I don't think I care anymore." And then it seems like he's about to cry as he says, "Kit." But his sadness is broken by one of those boys next to him saying, "Sad bastard." And that was the wrong thing to do because John Constantine was sad a second ago, but hearing that made him focus his sadness into anger. So he stands up and he begins to walk over to the young men. And he says to them, "What'd you say?" And we see there are three young men here. And I'm calling them men even though they look pretty young because they're drinking outside of the pub. So they obviously must be over drinking age. But they definitely look no more than maybe 18 or 19. And possibly younger because I'm not sure what the drinking age was in England in the 90s. And they're just three young white guys. One of them has a red hat on backwards. And the other two have long hair. One has red hair and one has brown hair. So as John approaches, the kid in the red baseball cap says, "Ugh." And then the one with the long red hair says, "Shit." And I guess John thinks the one with the backwards hat is the one that called him a sad bastard. So John looks at him and says, "Did you call me sad? I'll freaking smack you one, you little turd." The kid with the baseball cap looks terrified and he says, "Look, piss off, mate, will you? It wasn't me." Then John turns to the redhead sitting next to the boy in the cap and he says, "Was it you then?" And the redhead stutters, I... But John cuts him off saying, "It was." And then he grabs the redhead by his hair and he says, "You little bastard. You calling me sad? You're sad, you mop-headed wanker." And the redhead yells, "Get off me! Get off!" And this definitely crosses a line because now he's like physically harming one of them. So the young man with the brown hair stands up and he looks maybe a little bit older and he says, "Leave him alone, right?" But John does not let him go. He actually escalates it further. He sees a half-drunk pint glass on the table in front of the brown-haired man, and he grabs the glass and he smashes it into the brown-haired man's face. And he says, "Arsehole!" And that pint glass definitely shattered and pieces of glass went into that young man's face. So he sits back down bleeding and he's holding his face, and his friend with the red ball cap says, "Jesus!" And the redhead says to John, "No, leave me alone!" And John grabs him by the collar and pulls him close to his face and he says, "You pathetic little shit! Used to be kids had a bit of fire in them. You bastards are just smartasses eat out of your skulls half the time. No bloody use to anyone, are you?" And the kid is begging him saying, "Please, please." Then we get a panel of an older woman coming through the front door to the outside as she's bringing some drinks to some other patrons. And she sees this scene of John attacking this young man. And she yells to John saying, "Here, you, stop that." And John yells back to her, "Get lost, you witch." And this makes her mad. So she yells back, "Don't talk to me like that. I'll have you barred. I'll get my tom on you." But John is done with her. He's ignoring what she's saying. And he turns his attention back to the redhead who he still got by the collar. And he seems to be doing some kind of magic because he definitely knows some stuff about this young man that he wouldn't know if he just met him randomly. So he says to the redhead, "Seeing we're talking about sad sunshine, what about you touching up your kid's sister in her pram?" And this like really comes out of nowhere because how the hell would he know that? And the redhead looks at him wide-eyed and says, "How did..." And John pulls him closer and his face looks insane right now. His eyes are gigantic and he says, "I know." And the brown-haired kid behind John is saying, "Jesus Christ." And John continues revealing secrets of the redhead man saying, "Curious, were you? Or can you just not find a girl your own age? After all, she's only 6 months old. She won't remember, will she?" And then he throws the redhead on the ground and he says, "Bloody marvelous." Then we cut to the inside of the pub where the woman who John yelled at is now talking to the man behind the bar. And she says, "Here, some toe rags outside starting a fight. He called me a bloody witch, he did." And the man replies, "Eh?" So this must be her husband, Tom, that she mentioned earlier when she was yelling at John. And then we cut to outside on the road where we see Chaz just happens to be driving by. And he sees John yelling at these young men. And one of them has a bloody face that's got glass in it. And the redhead's on the ground in front of John. And Chaz is just kind of dumbstruck and he says, "John?" And then we cut back to John, who's now like yelling at all of the young men. And he's saying, "You'd all be bloody dead if it wasn't for me. And this is what I do it for, is it? A pack of tossers. And if it's not the tossers, it's the bastards." So obviously, John yelling that he's like saving the world and stuff. So they're very confused as they watch this. But John continues to escalate, and as he said, bastards, he kicks the redhead who's still on the ground in front of him in the face. And as this happens, Chaz has pulled over now, and he's running towards John yelling, John! John! For frick's sake, mate! Then he grabs John by the shoulder, and this kind of snaps John out of his anger. But just as it seems he's about to stop, you know, fighting and stuff, Tom, the man from the bar, comes out, and he yells to John, Right, what the bloody hell's this? Who called my Angie a witch? And Chaz, who was kind of leading John away from the scene, sees Tom coming towards them and says, Oh, shit. So before Tom can approach, he walks up to Tom and says, Bloke's just had a few, okay, mate? I'm taking him home now, right? But it's not all right. Tom yells back at him, He's a bloody lunatic. Look what he's done to these kids. And what about my wife, huh? And Chaz continues to try to calm the situation, saying, All right, all right. But Tom's not having any of that, and he says, It's not bloody all right. I ought to have him nicked. That's what I ought to do. And Chaz continues to reason with him, saying, Yeah, look. But whatever he says to Tom, we don't hear because we actually cut to John, who's leaning against the wall that borders the pub. And he seems like he's using the wall to steady himself because he's got his hand to his head like he's dizzy. And the narration says, They think I'm mad. I think they're right. The pit opens behind me. The pit that's always waiting. It doesn't matter if I crawl out. I know I'll fall back in. It's just a matter of time. And then John proceeds to throw up because he is like super drunk. And the wall that he's leaning against is only like 3 feet tall, so he could have thrown up on the street side of the wall, but instead, he vomited on the pub side. And of course, Tom, who's talking to Chaz, sees this and he says, What? Oh, that's the bloody limit. I'll have your bollocks. But then Chaz steps in between him and gets a little bit more serious with his reasoning and says, I'm trying to be nice to you, Granddad. Piss off. And Tom responds by punching Chaz in the face. Then we cut to Chaz and John inside of Chaz's car. And as John is sitting in the passenger seat, Chaz says, Well? But John is silent and doesn't say anything. He just smokes a cigarette. And then Chaz gets angered by this and says, Come on, John. What was all that about? And John, who's got his eyes closed, he's not looking at Chaz. He doesn't move and he says, Leave off, will you, Chaz? And of course, this makes Chaz angry and he says, No, I bloody won't. You were being a right arsehole. Like one of these old mad bastards who rabbits on about not fighting the war for layabouts like us. All that shit. And have you seen the friggin' state of my face? And I should mention that Chaz's left eye is definitely swollen. Not shut, but you could definitely tell he got punched in the face. And John, still leaning back, not opening his eyes, and smoking a cigarette, says, Kit left me. And that stops Chaz in his tracks, and he just says, Oh shit. Then we cut to Chaz and John sitting in Kit's old flat, and Chaz is saying, It's not so bad if she said you could stay till Friday. And John responds with a sarcastic, rah, rah. And Chaz continues, Well, I'm sorry anyway. And John, who's like in the same position as he was in the car, he's just now in a sofa chair. So his head is leaned back and his eyes are closed. And as Chaz apologizes, he just grunts saying, And Chaz continues, Right, I'll shut me mouth. I know how you feel like. And at that, John actually opens his eyes and turns to his friend and says, Chaz, you don't have a freaking clue how I feel. What would you know living with that fat bitch? So just shut up, for God's sake. And Chaz, of course, takes offense to this, and he says, Now wait just a bloody minute. But John cuts in, saying, Oh, bollocks. Piss off, will you, Chaz? Go back where you belong with all the other arseholes. And Chaz gets really angry at this, and we get a panel of, like, the anger building in him as he thinks, and then as we turn the page, we see him punching John in the face. But he doesn't stop there. He grabs John by the hair and he slams John's face into the coffee table in front of them. And he does it twice. And then he pulls John's face close to him as it's like bleeding and stuff. And he says, I'll freaking show you where you belong, Constantine. And still grabbing John by the hair, he forces John to walk to the restroom. And as he walks, John is protesting, saying, Ugh, get off. Get the frig off me. And then Chaz runs John's head into the door to open it to the restroom. And John yells out, Ow, Chaz, for Christ's sake. Then Chaz walks him over to the toilet and shoves his head in it. And as John's head goes underwater, he says, Ah, for fuck. Then we get a panel of Chaz looking pretty angry, holding John's head in the toilet for quite a while. Until finally he pulls John's head from the toilet and throws John down to the restroom tiles. And as he stands there looking at John, he says, Prick. And then he walks out of the restroom, I assume to leave, and John calls after him saying, You'll come crawling back. You always do. But Chaz doesn't turn around, he just continues to leave, and we see him walk out of the front door of the building to the streets and to his car. Then we get to nighttime, and we see John is leaning against a wall, And we see a mostly empty bottle of something in his hand. And the narration says, "Think it's midnight. Been marking off the hours with whiskey. What'd Brendan call it? Bottled sunshine. That's what he said. Doesn't look like sunshine to me. It slops in the bottle like wino's piss. Dark and sour and rotten." And then John throws the nearly empty bottle on the ground, smashing it. And he yells out, "Friggin' shit!" And then leans back against the wall and he says, "Ah, oh, Jesus. Jesus." And then he reaches in his coat and he pulls out another full bottle of liquor. And his narration says, "Good job, I've got another one." Then he opens the new bottle and he begins to drink that. Then we see he's outside of a cemetery now. And the gate is closed, but in the next panel we see he's inside of it. And the narration says, "Gate's no problem. All you need is to want to get in. I want, all right. This is where I belong. This is where all me mates hang out." And then it starts to drizzle and he goes to sit down on top of one of the above ground concrete graves. And his narration continues, "You saw what I was, Kit. You saw right through me front and you liked me anyway. So I made me plans and I wheeled and dealed and did what I do just so as I could be with you. Shouldn't have bothered with all that stuff. I should have dropped it and gone off with you. Bollocksed everything just because I can't handle the closeness. Because I'm afraid of a word. Just one little word." And then John lays down on top of the grave and his narration spells out L-O-V-E. And if you didn't remember, that's actually the moment that we began the comic with, where he's laying on the grave and the rain is falling hard now. And then we cut to Kit on a ferry and she is going to Belfast. And she's standing on the deck near the railing and she's watching the town as the boat pulls away. And then she looks away from the town down and she begins to cry and she says, "Bastard. Stupid wee bastard." And that is the end of the issue. So if you guys have any comments, questions, or suggestions, you can email me at planes, trains, and comic books, all one word, @gmail.com. And we will see you on the next one.